Welcome to Listen 2. This is Ted. The news was published on Saturday, September 28th. Joining us today are our guests, Eric and Kate. Let's dive into our discussion. Today, we're discussing a recent study linking childhood inflammation to mental health and cardiometabolic disorders in adulthood. Let's start with the basics. What exactly is inflammation, and why is it important?
Well, Ted, inflammation is like your body's personal security system. It's the way your body says, hey, something's not right here when you get hurt or sick. It's super important because it helps you heal. But here's the kicker. When this alarm system stays on too long, it can actually cause more problems than it solves. It's like having an overprotective bodyguard who starts attacking your friends.
You're not wrong, Eric, but let's not paint inflammation as the bad guy here. It's actually a superhero of our immune system. Without it,
I get where you're coming from, Kate, but we're not talking about the good kind of inflammation here. This study is zeroing in on the sneaky, long-term inflammation that doesn't go away. It's like a house guest that overstays their welcome and starts eating all your food.
Okay, I see your point. But we can't just blame everything on inflammation. There's a whole buffet of factors that could be contributing to these health issues. We're talking about mental health and cardiometabolic
disorders. Nobody's saying
it's
the only factor, Kate, but this study gives us a big clue that it might be a major player. It's like finding out that the quiet kid in class has actually been orchestrating all the pranks.
Interesting perspectives. Now, the study mentions C-reactive protein, or CRP, as a marker for inflammation. Can you explain what CRP is and why it's significant?
Sure thing, Ted. CRP is like the smoke alarm of your body. When there's inflammation, your liver starts pumping out this protein. The more CRP in your blood, the more inflammation you've got going on. It's a bit like how firefighters look for smoke to find the fire.
Hold up, Eric. While CRP is useful, it's not the be-all and end-all of inflammation markers. We're potentially missing a ton of information by...
I hear you, Kate, but CRP isn't just some random protein we picked out of a hat. It's the gold standard in medical settings for measuring inflammation. It's like using a thermometer to check for a fever, simple, reliable, and widely accepted.
Sure, it's widely used, but that doesn't mean it's perfect. What about all the other inflammatory markers we're not looking at? It's like trying to understand the plot of a movie.
I get your point, Kate, but let's not lose sight of the forest for the trees. The real strength of this study isn't just in using CRP, it's in how they used it. They measured it at three different points as these kids grew up. That's like taking snapshots of inflammation at different stages of life, giving us a much clearer picture of what's going on.
But Eric, we're still missing a huge chunk of the story. What about inflammation before age 9? That's like starting a book halfway through and expecting
to understand. Let's shift
gears a bit.
Consider the Framingham Heart Study, which began in 1948 and revolutionized our understanding of cardiovascular disease risk factors. How does this new study compare to the Framingham study?
Great question, Ted. The Framingham Heart Study was a game changer, kind of like the Beatles of medical research. It followed people for decades and helped us figure out what puts people at risk for heart disease. This new study is taking a page from that playbook, but with a twist. It's not just looking at heart health, but at how inflammation might be the link between our mental and physical well-being.
Hold on a second, Eric. While the Framingham study was groundbreaking, it had some serious limitations. It was basically a study of white, middle-class Americans. We can't just...
I see where you're coming from, Kate, but this new study isn't making the same mistake. It's using data from the Avon Longitudinal Study, which includes over 6,500 participants from all walks of life. It's like comparing a local high school play to a Broadway production. The scale and diversity are on a whole different level.
Even with 6,500 participants, we can't assume it represents everyone. There are so many cultural and environmental factors that could influence inflammation. It's like trying to understand the entire ocean.
Interesting
by
points.
Looking at...
How does the methodology of this study compare to the Framingham Heart Study?
Well, Ted, both studies are like time-lapse photography of health. They follow people over time to see how things change, but this new study has some serious upgrades. It's like comparing a flip phone to a smartphone. We've got advanced tech and biomarkers like CRP that the Framingham folks could only dream of back in the day.
Sure, we've got fancier tools, but that doesn't automatically make the results better. Sometimes the old school holistic approaches can tell us more. It's like thinking a high-tech fitness watch.
I get what you're saying, Kate. But these advanced biomarkers aren't just bells and whistles. They allow us to measure things more precisely and spot patterns we might have missed before. It's like having a high-powered microscope instead of a magnifying glass. You can see details that were invisible before.
But are we getting lost in the details and missing the bigger picture? What about all the social and environmental factors that influence health? It's like focusing so much on one tree
that we forget.
Actually,
Kate, the study does take those factors into account. They considered things like body weight, birth complications, and early childhood health issues. It's not just looking at biology in a vacuum. It's more like a complex recipe. They're considering all the ingredients, not just one.
Even so, there could be crucial factors they've overlooked. We need a more holistic approach to really understand these complex health issues. It's like trying to solve a Rubik's Cube while
looking ahead.
Looking at,
how do you think this research might impact future health interventions? What are two distinct ways things could unfold?
One exciting possibility is that we could start screening kids for inflammation early on. It's like having an early warning system for potential health issues down the road. If we can spot the kids with persistently high inflammation, we might be able to step in and prevent both mental health and cardiometabolic problems before they even start.
That's an oversimplified approach, Eric. We can't just reduce complex health issues to a single biomarker. It's like trying to predict a person's entire
I'm not suggesting we ignore other factors, Kate. Early screening is just the starting point. It's about identifying who might be at risk, then taking a comprehensive approach to improve their health. It's like noticing a kid is struggling in school. You don't just give them a tutor. You look at their whole situation and address all the factors that might be affecting their performance.
But focusing so much on inflammation could lead to over-medication. We might end up giving kids unnecessary anti-inflammatory treatments that could have side effects. It's like trying to prevent a cold.
Whoa, hold on there, Kate. Nobody's saying we should medicate every kid with high CRP levels. The goal is to use this information to guide preventive strategies. We're talking about promoting healthier lifestyles, reducing stress, maybe changing diets. It's more like teaching kids to wash their hands and eat their veggies than putting them on medication.
Those are important interventions, sure. But why limit them to kids with high inflammation markers? All children could benefit from healthier lifestyles. It's like only teaching some kids about nutrition.
What's another way this research could impact future health approaches?
Another exciting possibility is that this research could lead to new treatments that target inflammation for both mental health and cardiometabolic disorders. We might start seeing a more integrated approach to treating these conditions that we use to think we're totally separate. It's like realizing that the plumbing and electrical problems in your house are actually connected. You can fix both by addressing the underlying issue.
That's a dangerous path, Eric. We can't assume that treating inflammation will magically solve complex mental health issues. There's a real risk of oversimplifying these conditions and ignoring important psychological and social factors. It's like thinking
nobody's suggesting inflammation is the only factor, Kate, but if it plays a significant role, addressing it could be a valuable part of a comprehensive treatment approach. It's like realizing that lack of sleep can affect both your physical health and your mood. Addressing it doesn't solve everything, but it can make a big difference as part of a larger treatment plan.
We need to be extremely cautious about drawing causal conclusions from this study. Correlation doesn't imply causation. And we could be overlooking other crucial factors. It's like assuming that because ice cream sales and crime rates both go up in summer.
Thank you, Eric and Kate, for this thought-provoking discussion. It's clear that while this study offers exciting new insights, there's still much to explore in understanding the complex relationships between inflammation, mental health, and cardiometabolic disorders. As always, further research will be crucial in shaping our approach to these important health issues.